your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whitey.
Good morning and welcome to Public Pulse. Some kids have already headed back to school this year. Others will begin next week. So this morning, I am joined by primary care physician at Sheridan Memorial Hospital's primary care, Dr. Emily Denny, and Jen Rastbaum, the primary care interim manager. Good morning and welcome back to the show, Doc.
Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead and pull that mic pretty close to you. Now, I think every parent out there with a kid in daycare or school, they know that the kiddos are going to be coming home with some illness. This is typical. But is that more likely in the first few weeks as we kick school off?
Historically, it's usually later in the fall. Is when things really pick up. You get into flu season and RSV, respiratory syncytial virus. Those usually pick up September, October, sometimes even as late as January, February, depending on the season. You know, this year we seem to be having a little bit of COVID going through the community. And then it's just kids being around kids and not washing their hands and doing all those things that kids do. So
my question would be, is that because we don't go outside as much? We're confined a little bit more as the fall starts out of summer?
A little bit of that. Also, viruses historically move better in colder air.
So. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So like a cough will last longer in cold air?
Mm-hmm. It spreads better more easily in colder air, yes.
That's fascinating. So anyone working outside, just so you know. So if we look at the common viruses that you're dealing with in kids up at primary care, what would you say those are here in Sheridan?
Common viruses, you've got your flu, your influenza, you have your RSV, which I mentioned before. That's usually your little kids, more your daycare kiddos, your pre-K, early kindergarten. You have your hand, foot, and mouth, which goes through every year, usually goes through starting with daycares because they're sharing everything.
The one thing about a two-year-old, they see with their mouth for some reason, right? They don't even look at the object. It's just a hand, mouth, and there
exactly.
It is.
Exactly. And then they're all sharing it.
Yeah. And then, hey, check this out. This is pretty cool. Now,
you know, there's some, you know, just different rhinoviruses, you know, different adenoviruses that go through this, your runny nose, your cough, your common cold. There's a ton of different labels for them. We don't test for that because it's super, super expensive and nobody wants that bill.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
They just haven't, you know, made the testing inexpensive yet. So to like to do a full, respiratory virus panel is quite expensive. So we don't do that in the common clinic.
Now, when it comes to those RSVs, which call them rhinoviruses, are those just so common that we kind of associate, we throw that umbrella, oh, it's the common cold.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
But that's what we're dealing with.
Right.
Now, since COVID-19, more and more people do wash their hands.
Mm-hmm.
But how effective is washing your hands at preventing the spread of this kind of stuff?
Hand washing is probably at this point the most effective thing we can do. And it's good hand washing. It's washing your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water, drying them correctly. You know, there's a few different steps to it. It's not just stick your hands under some water and,
and hope for the best, right?
The best, yeah. So
antibacterial soap. My wife and I had this discussion last night. I used to believe that the only true antibacterial soap was that bar that you doctors use, you know, scrubbing up.
Right.
Because that's what I always saw.
Yeah.
You know, it was depicted in popular mediums and, and, you know, the doctors always had that. It's kind of a beige looking bar.
Yeah.
And I thought it was all hubbub that they put this in a squirt bottle. Yeah. Is it though?
I may be a little controversial. I don't think antibacterial soap should be used outside of hospitals. It just leads to resistance. The best soap you can use is just a good standard soap. Because you're just, the properties of the soap will pick everything up and wash it off. We don't need to be killing everything on our hands. So,
There's the discussion that I was having with my wife last night.
Right.
And she said, you know, there are people who believe this should only be in hospitals.
Right.
Because it may be reducing our immunity.
You know, it's killing off some of the good bacteria on our hands. I think there's, if you want to really go on to the future, there's going to be probiotic hand sanitizers and probiotic cleansers for surfaces that actually put good bacteria back.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. That'll be the way of the future.
But as of right now,
Right now it's, you know, standard soap and water, antibacterial soap. You can use it if you feel like you have to, but it's not required.
Okay. Because right now we've got a scorch the earth policy going on.
Pretty much.
We're just eliminating everything. Now, what about like for cuts, little cuts and things like that?
Using soap and water.
Really? Just soap. Go to the old classic soap and water?
Soap and water. I mean, just plenty of soap, plenty of water. I mean, yeah.
And it's really the bubbles that are doing the majority of the work there, right?
Right. You know, you want that good soap action, but yeah, a bar of soap works, you know. Liquid soap works. It's just, you know, moving it around, rubbing it, covering all the surfaces, getting that friction, you know, 20 good seconds.
That's really interesting about like maybe in the future we have that probiotic soap. That would be pretty fascinating.
That'd be pretty cool.
Now, I've heard two sides to the hand sanitizers, and you and I were talking before the show. And my wife, God bless her, you know, she's got hand sanitizer everywhere in the house. All I have to do is just look at her and hold my hand out. She knows what I'm doing. And I get a little squirt in my hand and I'm good to go. I've heard the people say the same thing that we're kind of talking about with antibacterial soap, where they're like, we are really scorching the earth here. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to be doing that.
You know, I think we use it because it's easy. You know, especially talking about a school. You know, lots of kids, those kind of things. It's easy to use it. It's quick. It's fast. Sending every kid to the bathroom or, you know, it can be time consuming. So, you know, it's a necessary evil, I guess is how I would put it. But, you know, if you have the option to wash your hands, I would always go for that first.
When I was in New Orleans, there was a lot going on down there. This was during Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of germs everywhere. So our medic would stand there with the hand sanitizer. We'd get in a line and he'd go down and give us the old squirt and we'd wipe our hands, but he would never use it himself. And one day I asked him and he said, no, man, I wash my hands instead. He's like, so he said that it could possibly be creating like a smorgasbord of dead germs on your hand that you're not getting washed off.
Yeah. You know, at a certain point you do need to wash your hands, you know, even in the clinic where using hand sanitizers all day, but at a certain point we're always washing our hands to get all of that off. You know, and honestly, there are certain bacteria that don't respond to hand sanitizers and we're required to wash our hands. So,
yeah. So again, we just return to the old trusty soap and water for 30 to 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Pretty easy to remember that, you would think.
You would think.
Now, when it comes to thoughts on the use of disinfectant sprays, there's a lot of different bleach wipes out there now. At least once a week, take the phone out of my case and I wipe it down with one of these things. What do you think about those being used by parents on things that may be coming back into the home from school?
I mean, if they can just be washed, I think you just wash them. If they can't be washed, you know, wiping them down well. You know, my thing about bleach wipes is not using it on things kids put their mouths on.
Really? Yeah.
You know?
Well, and bleach is, I mean, it's chlorine.
Yeah.
It's not exactly conducive to the human biome.
Yeah. Right.
So we might be unconsciously poisoning ourselves.
I mean, that's a whole other kettle of fish and not something I have expertise on, but
It's good to use it, but not overuse it.
Again, it's a necessary evil for those certain things that you feel like you really need to keep clean. I think it should be used on certain surfaces, probably periodically. But if you can wash them, ideally with soap and water, or you know, put them in the laundry, those kind of things.
So always stick to that soap and water. Old trusty. What are some other good practices to prevent the spread of illnesses within the household?
Covering your cough.
Oh, yeah.
Not using your hands to cover your cough. You know, using the old cough in the elbow technique. Coughing into Kleenex if you can. Sneezing into Kleenex. Washing your hands after you sneeze. Those kind of things.
Things that we would think we do, but like getting the kids to pick up these habits.
Oh, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
But, you know, they learn by example, so.
Yes, absolutely. I can actually remember that's where I learned the cough in the elbow.
Mm-hmm.
Was watching somebody that I mentored under.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, on that, we're going to have more with Sheridan Memorial Hospital's primary care physician, Dr. Emily Denny. Right after this, you're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE, 103.9 FM, Sheridan. Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm Floyd Whiting, and this morning I'm speaking with primary care physician at Sheridan Memorial Hospital's primary care, Dr. Emily Denny. And I've got Jen Raspon, the primary care interim manager. Now, according to some studies, it is not abnormal for kids to have between 8 and 12 colds a year and still have a healthy immune system. Now, that might seem like a lot, but spread out over the whole year. I mean, Doc, have you seen this many? I mean, is this average around here that you, from your experience?
I think for older kids, that'd be pretty high. You see that in, like, the little kids quite frequently, you know, your daycare age, your pre-K, or they're sharing every single germ, and especially kiddos that are new to a new environment, you'll typically see as they're getting exposed to all of the slightly different germs, you'll see those go through. But
when it comes to things like chickenpox, are people still doing the practice of, okay, so little Joey's got chickenpox, so let's put everyone.
No.
Okay.
No, we do the childhood vaccines for chickenpox, for varicella now, and that starts at age 1 and then again at age 4 or 5, so.
When I was a kid, they just still put you all in the room to play with the kid who had chickenpox, and that's what you did.
My generation, too.
Now, again, I want to thank you for being here with us. Kids are or will soon be back in classes, and parents and teachers know that the illnesses will come home. And with kids suffering so many colds and coughs, some parents may be wondering, when do I make the trip to the hospital?
It's never wrong to get seen by your family doctor, your pediatrician, if you have any concerns about the illness, just to get checked out and get that reassurance. Reasons to get evaluated, though, if you're more concerned about how things are progressing, you know, fever's not resolving over a couple of days, progressive hacking cough, any sign of any trouble breathing at all, any trouble with staying hydrated, would all be, you know, reasons to be evaluated.
So this would be over like the course of 2-3 days?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, or, you know, 3 to 5. I mean, this typical flu, the typical RSV, a lot of your colds usually last about, you know, 5 to 7 days potentially, and they usually peak around days 3 to 5. So it may get worse before it gets a little bit better. And so it's just with how that kid is looking.
For me, it was I had one of those fancy computerized thermometers, and you know, the ones that go across the forehead, I heard were best.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I invested in. And boy, you know, I was constantly taking temperatures, looking for that fever, because for me, and I think many others, there's the tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're at 101, okay, I'm concerned, but 102, we're going to see the doc. Is that typical?
I mean, a lot of parents will do that. It's not necessarily necessary if you can keep the fever down and you can keep your kiddo hydrated, and they're doing all right. But if it's that, do they have any other symptoms that just don't feel quite right? Do they have some kind of rash, or are they just not turning around? You know, and again, it's never wrong to get checked out, you know, especially during flu season. You know, if somebody in the home does get sick, there is Tamiflu, which is the antiviral for flu. So if you can get that started early, and then, you know, family members can also get treated as prophylactic. So, you know, being on top of it and getting seen early can also be a very good thing, because some of those things you don't start later generally. So,
yeah. Now, when it comes to fevers, mm-hmm. That is the body kicking on the immune system.
Trying to fight. Yeah.
It's trying to cook the virus away. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of these viruses. The common cold. Mm-hmm. You and I have already had that discussion. A lot of things get put underneath that mm-hmm. umbrella. So what would you say is the real common cold? You RSV?
I mean, the true common cold is just those little rhinoviruses. It's that runny nose, sneezing, just kind of icky feeling, maybe a low-grade fever. But, you know, there's just so many of those, they just get labeled, but I would still call it that. It's separate from the flu. The flu, you know, influenza can be the little more significant, cough, fever. Sometimes those kiddos will have trouble breathing. Adults will get that. And that can be a pretty significant season.
Yeah.
Has its own true season usually.
So when we look at a treatment mm-hmm. for these common colds, what would you say is the best old-fashioned treatment?
Or? Good old supportive care. Keeping the kiddo hydrated, if they're over a year old, you can do honey and lemon for cough, keeping their fever down, Tylenol, ibuprofen, if they don't have any allergies, and just time.
Gotta wait it out. You know, I heard once that chicken soup actually did have some sort of medicinal property to it.
Yeah. Well, it's got protein, it's good hydration, it's a combination, it's got some salts, it's great.
So it actually, that really does help in a lot of different ways.
It's a good thing.
All right, so we're moving on down to the flu. Mm-hmm. What exactly is the flu?
Mm-hmm. It's a virus caused by influenza. It, like I said, it's the cough, fever, muscle aches. Sometimes you get what they call the stomach flu version. So you get some more, vomiting, diarrhea kind of symptoms with it. Every year is a little bit different. You know, there's several different strains of the flu. And so that's why the flu shot is always a challenge, because they're trying to cover for, you know, three or four different versions of it. And they're basing it off of what happened in the Southern Hemisphere from the season prior.
Really?
Uh-huh.
And so that's kind of where it all comes from.
You know, Southern Hemisphere watches what our season looks like. We watch the Southern Hemisphere, and then there's so many different strains, and they try to get like the top three or four usually.
Wow.
And that vaccine. And then, you know, some years they get it better than others. So,
Right off the top of your head, when is flu season?
It depends on your location in the United States. Wyoming, and where I was in Montana, it was actually generally January, February was when it would really peak.
Really? Oh, mm-hmm. In the super cold. Mm-hmm. Those are the super cold months. Yeah.
You know, other places, you know, when I was in Texas, it was always October-ish. So.
Wow. It's crazy how that shifts like mm-hmm. that. Now, what's the best treatment for flu?
You know, all those supportive things, if you can get Tamiflu, it does seem to help, or one of the other antivirals. I don't want to label just the one, but there are multiple antivirals you can use for flu, and if you can get them started within the first couple of days, and then there's also, you know, you could also use it as a prophylactic. So if someone in your house gets exposed, you can, you know, call your doctor's office and get it for the family. So
now, when I get the flu, mm-hmm. I bust out the Pedialyte. I don't know if people know what this is, but think Gatorade on steroids, really, mm-hmm. is what it is. Is that a good practice?
I mean, it's got lots of electrolytes and a little bit of sugar, so it's great. But, you know, some, like, for example, a lot of kiddos don't like the taste of that. So half, you know, one of the pediatricians in my last practice always said, you know, half apple juice, half water was just as good.
Oh, really? Okay. That's good to hear.
So
just kind of half and half some juice, mm-hmm. Apple juice specifically.
That was just her example. I'd have to go into if there's other ones, but that was the one she always mentioned. So,
and a lot of this is just keeping kids hydrated. Mm-hmm. Is that like a main concern?
I mean, hydration is when kids don't feel good, they tend to look punky. They tend to look pathetic. If their stomach's a little upset, they don't want to drink. And then their sugar gets low, and kids need lots of sugar. And, you know, just lots of calories, not necessarily sugar, but they need lots of calories to keep them going. And so, you know, if they are sick enough and they're in the hospital, they're going to get some sugar in their IV. So,
yeah. Yeah. I don't think a lot of people realize that that's not just like saline that you're putting in those lactated ringers. Have got a lot of stuff inside of it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right. So moving on down the line, strep throat. This is a big one. When kids get struck with this, I don't know. I feel so miserable when my little girl was miserable.
Yeah.
And everyone knows that pain in the throat, not being able to swallow and just watching kids wince, you know.
So if you do think your kid might have strep due to that really painful sore throat, you know, and again, I didn't mention it, but common colds and flu can all cause sore throat. But if you really have any concern for strep, they should be evaluated so it can be tested because that does need antibiotics.
Okay. So that's one, if I think that's what we've got going on, straight to the primary care.
Primary care, pediatrician, urgent care if you can't get in, but they should be evaluated. So
when it comes to strep throat, because so many things can be seen, you know, they share symptoms. What am I looking for when it comes to strep throat?
Usually it's that really like isolated, very severe sore throat. It looks pretty red. And then a lot of times they'll have that fever with it.
Persistent.
You know, I mean, if it's been a day or two, I would get him checked out.
Okay. Okay.
So I wouldn't necessarily sit on that one.
Strep can spread pretty quickly in these confined environments, can't it?
Yeah.
So one kid goes down with strep and the whole class has got to be concerned.
Yeah. I mean, if they're sharing, you know, older kids, not as much. It's the, you know, it's the littler kids for sure. My 6-year-old got it a year ago and it kept coming back. And so tonsils had to come out.
Oh, really? Does that actually help? That actually does help. I still have mine, believe it or not. They didn't get those from me. They got my appendix, but I managed to hang on to those. And we're going to talk about one that might not be as prominent as others, but I see it a lot in the little ones. Foot and mouth.
Yeah, hand, foot, and mouth. It's actually a Coxsackie virus. It's that family. You see it in the little kids. They get the little rash on their hands, their feet, and in their mouth, and they're sore. Adults don't always realize it, but they can get it too if their kids get it. and that can be pretty uncomfortable.
Now, what are the symptoms of these things? Are they pretty apparent to see?
I mean, it's a pretty distinctive, you know, red dotted rash on the hands and on the feet, and you'll see it in the little spots in their mouth. They'll usually have a fever and just feel kind of icky and, you know, like, you know, be clingy and uncomfortable. So,
and where does this come from? What is this one?
It just spreads through the saliva.
Really? So again,
and it's, you know, in secretions, so.
It's that kids putting things in their mouth and then saying, hey, you should try this. Yeah. It's fantastic.
You know, and you know, daycares do their best, but
it's
gonna
busy.
Happen. It's gonna happen.
It's gonna happen. So I think that's one thing that a lot of people don't understand. When I was in the service, there were certain practices, and you know this, you're a veteran. You're sleeping head to foot. You know, you're staring at your buddy's feet at the cot next to you because when you cough, that way you're not spreading it throughout the entire hooch, right? And so there were these little practices that we used to have to try and prevent the spread of illness in a confined area among soldiers. And a lot of those are just applied to schools because it's the same principle. So when it comes to that type of environment and you just know it's going to happen,
right,
what would you suggest to parents, you know, when the kids do come in back from that environment? Is it like a wipe everything down situation?
If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. They've probably already been exposed, but, you know, just trying to keep things as clean as you can at home, you know.
So it's all right to go ahead and use the disinfectant spray on all the toys that one kid let the other one borrow. All right, on that, we're going to take another quick commercial break. We'll have more with Sheridan Memorial Hospital's primary care physician, Dr. Emily Denny, right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE, 103.9 FM, Sheridan. Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting, and this morning I am joined by primary care physician at Sheridan Memorial's Primary Care, Dr. Emily Denny. I'm also joined by the primary care interim manager, Jen Rasper. Now, we've been discussing the kids returning to school, mm-hmm. getting some good practices in regard to stemming the spread of those mm-hmm. common illnesses. Mm-hmm. So I'm just letting you know, if you miss that, jump on SheridanMedia.com a little later today. Dr. Denny's got some good practices for you. Keep those illnesses kind of stemmed down. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank you for graciously giving us some time to come in and discuss these things, because it's about to start. Mm-hmm. I mean, the waves are mm-hmm. going to start coming in. How are things going at the clinic?
Things are going very well. Things are going well.
Do you guys have like a busy summer, or is this kind of a downtime for everyone up there?
It's been busy. It's been steady. You know, it's not the fall peak of flu, but it's been a very steady, busy summer, you know.
Is there anything that we end up dealing with more in the summer?
Injuries.
Just kids falling off a set, the bike scratches. Just,
yeah, you know, falls, injuries, parents doing the co-ed leagues, you know, the adult leagues.
So it's the parents as much as anyone else. Gotcha. Yeah. Sprained ankles and scraped knees. So yep. let's talk about some scraped knees, because I think we're going to, you know, we're probably seeing an increase of that. Kids on the playground mm-hmm. having fun. We were talking about how just good old fashioned soap and water mm-hmm. helped with the stemming the spread of illness. Is that what I should be washing?
Absolutely.
Scrapes. Yeah,
mm-hmm. absolutely. Soap and water can go so far for just keeping that wound clean, getting all the dirt out of it. And then you just want to keep it clean and dry. You know, reasons to use a Band-Aid is just to protect it from the environment more than anything. And to keep it clean.
What about all those antibacterial wipes, things like that?
No, all you need is soap and water. You know, if you really want to put something on it, you know, you could do an antibiotic ointment, like a Neosporin, you can use it. You don't have to. Honestly, Vaseline or Aquaphor work just as well.
Really?
It's just that little skin barrier. So.
So that's what you're actually trying to create.
Yeah, it's a little protection, yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, if you want the antibiotics, you're concerned, it's there, but...
Now, we talked about the, I told you, my father had that spray.
Yeah, bacitracin, yeah.
It's a good practice, but again...
I don't think it's necessary, unless you just think it's like the dirtiest wound ever, but generally you don't need to. Soap and water and just really thorough rinsing can really, you know, and using clean water, obviously, but that can go as far as anything.
And always remember.
You don't need to use alcohol. You don't need to use hydrogen peroxide. The bubbling doesn't mean anything good. So.
And that, Doc, is something that I used to do, because I thought that meant, well, look at it, kill all those germs. But it's not, is it?
You're just irritating the skin and probably slowing healing. So
lay off the hydrogen peroxide.
I mean, if you really want a little alcohol in the exterior skin, but not in the wound itself. But,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. See, at my house, I tough guy it. Just pop that cap open and just dump alcohol on it and grit your teeth. Not a good idea. Not
burns.
A good idea. Well, if it burns, it means it's working, right? old practices. So how does the clinic really prepare for back to school then? Do you guys your staffing or anything?
No, not necessarily. We just are always trying to be fully staffed and ready. You know, back to school, we're trying to encourage those kiddos to come in for their well child checks with either us or their pediatrician, getting those sports physicals done. Those sports physicals usually should be done by their pediatrician or family practice provider who knows them. Getting them checked out, talking about all those healthy behaviors, and then, you know, having those conversations about, you know, which vaccines and when, and, all the good conversations to have now and be ready. So
now when it comes to those vaccinations, mm-hmm. are they available down at primary care?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, it's always seasonal. So the flu vaccine usually starts, September, October, I think in our clinics. I know some places will have it earlier, but that's just not really necessary to have it that early.
Okay. You're not doing anything by getting it early.
No,
You want to go in during peak season.
Yeah, you want to catch it before peak season, but you want to cover for that peak season. So.
Okay. So what other, do you know right offhand what vaccines you're probably given most at the beginning of a school?
I mean, you know, we're always trying to keep kids on top of their routine vaccinations because there's a big vaccine schedule. And then you have your flu ones. You know, you could always have that conversation about COVID and when. And the little tiny kiddos, there's some new stuff for RSV. And that's there's also a conversation for the grown-ups on that one now as well. So.
Wow. And as they get into the teenage years, those kind of shift a little bit, don't mm-hmm. they? There's other vaccines available.
And it's just different, yeah.
Yeah. Different from even when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
If I needed to get a sports physical done,
mm-hmm.
and I don't, you know, I'm not sure if a lot of people have the old primary care provider like we used to,
mm-hmm.
you know, the family doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't have that, but I need to get this done so I can get Johnny into football.
Mm-hmm.
Is that available down at primary
absolutely.
Care?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. We try to use that as an opportunity to bring the kiddo in. You know, a lot of times the well child check is covered well by insurance and we can do that or just the sports physical. It's whatever, you know, the parents really want. But if that kid doesn't have a medical home and doesn't have a provider, you know, they should be seen by someone.
Okay.
So.
And now what is it called? A well child check?
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
That's basically your annual physical exam for kiddos, you know, and there's different, you know, milestones, different things we're evaluating at each year of life. So,
okay. Whether it would like mm-hmm. growth
and height and, you know, where are they growing well, you know, talking about, you know, the different factors that may affect them as a, you know, as a middle school versus a high schooler and, you know. Puberty versus getting through puberty and
poor kids.
I know.
What a nightmare.
There's just so many different conversations you can have at each of those different, you know, years. So.
Yeah. Now,
you know, talking about mental health, all of it. So,
and that's something that I was kind of tiptoeing around.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure if I was going to ask you about that, but
okay.
Like, because that is a really tough time
mm-hmm.
for kids.
It's harder now than ever, I think.
Yeah,
so.
I agree. And so I can have that conversation with you guys down there.
Mm-hmm.
And,
absolutely. Anytime.
Okay. And I think that's, you know, we've got a lot of specialists
mm-hmm.
in the world now.
Mm-hmm.
But my primary care provider
mm-hmm.
is also trained.
To handle mental health, yes.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I can say, hey, I'm having some issues here. What do you think?
Absolutely. Every day. We do that every day.
Okay.
So, see? You know, you know, if we feel like it's outside of our scope, yes, I may refer you, but, you know, I can handle generally most things in the office. We can at least get you started and get you in the right direction.
Some recommendations, things like that. See, mm-hmm. and that's, again, I don't
mm-hmm.
know if a lot of parents know
mm-hmm.
that I can bring that up to you.
Absolutely.
My primary care provider.
Absolutely.
Well, that is great. And then Sheridan Memorial is going off and they're building this new behavioral health
unit, yeah.
And that's fantastic. Will you guys be looking forward to like that as referrals and things like that? Will you be able to utilize that in that way?
I think, you know, we see patients in crisis occasionally, so I think that will be very helpful. And when they have the psychiatrist up there, I think they might be doing some outpatient as well, I've heard, potentially. So that's going to be a good referral and just a resource, so.
Yeah, so there you go, folks. You can actually have these
but don't
mental
take,
health.
Don't take me to the bank on that because I'm not in charge of that.
Well, yeah, exactly. A lot of services will be offered, a lot of new things, a lot of new options
mm-hmm.
for people in Sheridan. I
right.
think that's great. But again, one thing that I just wanted to touch on is I did not know
mm-hmm.
that my primary care provider is also trained in mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And you can help me out in some things. Now, you're a doctor and a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like to do in your downtime, Doc?
What downtime?
That's a good point.
I have two girls in elementary school and, you know, we're busy. They
yeah.
keep me busy.
So as a parent yourself, you know all of this stuff that we've been talking
absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. I've lived it.
Yeah, personal experience. So how do you prepare the kids in the morning?
You know, trying to make sure they get that healthy breakfast, make sure they got plenty of sleep the night before, make sure they have what they need for school, supporting them in the evenings when they get trying to get their homework done and those kind of things, just all those normal, you know, parental skills. So.
As a doctor and a parent,
mm-hmm.
What do you
and
think?
I couldn't do it without my husband, let me put it.
Oh, yeah, teamwork all the way. Totally agree with you on that. like the influence of like social media, the influence of these large devices now, you know, my daughter, who's now in college, but she told me once, she said, you can tell who was a pad kid in class because they still have it, you know, and they do everything on it. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's a practice. Some people, but what are your thoughts on that?
I think technology is around us. I've got a lot of different arguments for either direction. I think the key is teaching your child to use it responsibly, and not feeling like that's what they have to use all the time, and not letting them use it all of the time. Kids who use it all of the time, especially if they have behavior issues, tend to have even more problems with emotional control because they never learn emotional control. And then social media is just so, can be full of bullying. So having those tough conversations with your kiddos, trying to delay that use as long as you can, but allowing them to have some access to technology over time and increasing as they get older, is important. So
moderation. Because I mean, now they've even got pads that belong to the school that we hand out to make things easier in class. And so, I mean, they're constantly surrounded by it.
Yeah.
Do you see anything in, you know, in your profession as a result of this?
I mean, from social media use, like I said, there's just so much increased anxiety and depression. There's just so much bullying that occurs online. So many different ways of inadvertent bullying that sometimes we don't even realize until, you know, those apps and those companies do things. You know, and then again, like I said, if they just constantly are using the phones, they don't always learn emotional control. They don't learn patience. They don't, you know, how do you amuse yourself and, you know, have other hobbies. So
human interaction.
Exactly.
I mean, it's, that was so important to us because my ex-wife and I knew Katie was going to be an only child. So we got her into daycare as soon as she started to crawl. That was their rule. You know, she's got to crawl and then we can get her in. And because we wanted her to have that interaction with other children, we didn't want her having, like, you know, an only child syndrome, I guess is what some people call it. But so a lot of kids I see nowadays, and this is just my opinion, you know, the pad kids, as my daughter would call them, they kind of isolate themselves away from everybody and just kind of focus on them. And so I wonder what the long term is going to look like in society.
It's going to be very different, I think.
Yeah. So make sure that you're doing that in moderation, folks. Now, is there anything else about primary care or the primary care clinic that you would like folks to know or consider, keep in mind?
I think we're an awesome team. We have a lot of great providers down there. We have internists down there. We have primary care. We have multiple nurse practitioners who are amazing. We love to see the whole family. We have a great staff, and we're happy to see anybody and make them welcome. So.
When it comes to that cradle to the grave, it comes to bringing people in. I mean, how do I walk through the door? I mean, it's not the VA. It's not like I'm registering, right?
No, but, you know, calling in advance, trying to see if you can get set up with someone, and then, you know, being able to get records if you saw another provider somewhere else and those kind of things to get set up. But it's a pretty straightforward process.
Okay.
It's Jen. Easy. And she can talk to that
I'm just going to ask you a couple quick questions for the folks that are looking to get a lot of this stuff done ASAP, because we got sports coming up. We've got kids going into school. Tell me, what's the best route to schedule?
Well, actually, the clinic is coming up with a couple of different options. It all funnels through the same place. You can make a phone call and talk to our schedulers. Get the schedulers can kind of figure out the need of the patient and what kind of provider that patient needs to be seen. So you can call them directly. We actually utilize text message now. So same number that we use for clinic calling in, you can also text the exact same message to the clinic. You know, I need to be seen. My son needs to get updated on his vaccinations, needs a sports physical. And we utilize texting technology as well. So those are usually the two easiest routes to contact the clinic, text or call. Phone number is 307-675-2690. We have it posted on our Facebook page. We have it posted on the hospital website. But yeah, super easy to connect with the scheduling team. They'll respond back with, like, if there's any additional records that are needed to be sent over. We can do so much of it, especially, you know, nowadays where everybody wants to use their cell phone to try to connect via text. So, yeah, it's really pretty easy. Most of the time, we have both same-day appointments. We also can schedule out and just see everybody in the family.
So. That's fantastic. Yeah. And making it easier and easier.
Trying to get to, in yes. There. Yep.
Is it pretty easy for those who've moved into the area recently to get a hold of medical records from former facilities that they were at?
I'm not going to say it's easy. We try to streamline the process. We have the forms at the office, and I suspect that we're trying to figure out a way that we can have those filled out electronically and texted back.
Yeah.
Usually we can get medical records turned around from other facilities within about 2 weeks. So, I mean, we might want to put an appointment out for 2 weeks and get those medical records brought in. We do have to have a release from the patient or the patient's guardian. But it's usually, if it's somewhere outside of Sheridan, it usually takes about 2 weeks to get that information in.
Okay.
And if there's an urgent need, we can see the patient and do the record review later.
So. Okay. Fantastic. Yeah. There we go. Ladies, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to come in and talk about this really important thing. And boy, let's just hope the best for the season. Huh?
Thank you.
All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM.